Welcome to Grass Talk Radio. This show is for people who play bluegrass music and anybody who might want to.
The prison guard shut the iron door behind me.
Howdy, folks. Howdy, and welcome back to Grass Talk Radio. In today's episode, this episode is going to be a continuation of the little series that I've been doing on being a band member, practicing in a band, playing in a band, because as I've stated several times, bluegrass is a band form, and this episode is about playing in bands. But what we're going to talk about today is playing on PA systems. If you play bluegrass ever in public, you're going to begin to encounter PA systems. And PA means public address systems, and that is really an incorrect term. Everybody calls them a PA, but it means public address, which is, you know, Teddy Roosevelt giving a speech, or, you know, maybe Franklin Roosevelt. public address, speaking so that lots of people can hear you. And today, I think probably a more correct term for what we think of as amplifying a band so that the audience can hear the band, the probably more correct term is sound reinforcement. Because your band is putting out a little bit of sound, but it gets reinforced and amplified so the audience can hear it. But anyway, I'm going to use the term PA. Whenever I say PA, I mean sound reinforcement. Okay, I'm also going to break this episode into two parts. So this is part one, because I feel like if I jump right into the whole discussion of what is a PA and what do you need and how do you use them and all that, we'll be getting ahead, putting the horse before the cart, as they say. Because most people, their first encounters with playing over a PA system will be long before they ever own their own PA. A kind of a typical progression is you start learning how to play, then you start going to some jams, then a little band forms, and then you get asked to play somewhere and you play acoustically with no PA. And then you maybe get on at a little festival and you show up and there's a sound man there and he's got microphones and you don't know anything about how to perform over this PA system. That's what we're going to talk about. When you walk up on stage and somebody else has set up the PA, somebody else is running sound, how do you deal with that? How do you sound as good as you can, bring your music to the audience as well as you can, and not create too many problems along the way? So that's what this episode is about, is playing on other people's PA system. In a future episode, I'm going to talk about the do-it-yourself route, where you're a band and you're being expected to show up and play gigs with your own PA system. And that I'm reserving for a future episode. But these two episodes will kind of go back to back. So playing on other people's PA system, here's some important ideas that you need to remember. And it really doesn't matter. You need to set aside how well you play your instrument, or what kind of musician you are. Honestly, that doesn't have anything to do with what you know about PAs and what you know about performing over them. They're two different things. They're two completely different categories of knowledge. And you could be the world's greatest player of an instrument and know nothing of PAs. So think of them as two different majors in the College of Bluegrass Performing. You know, one thing is to be able to sing and play well and have a great bluegrass sound. Another thing is to put that over a PA system successfully so that the audience hears it and thinks you have a great sound. So, you know, the first thing is just admit what you do not know. and then, you know, try to learn something about it. And you'll learn a lot by doing it wrong, or by observing other people. Just begin to understand that playing music is not just you and your voices and your instruments. In so many cases, it's going to be projected out to a larger audience over microphones and various other equipment. The more you know about that, the better you will come across to the audience. And that is the whole idea, isn't it? You know, play good bluegrass and the audience hears good bluegrass. That's the goal. Well, that in-between step has now been inserted between you, the player, and them, the audience. And it's a whole bunch of stuff that you may not know anything about. Or, worse yet, you may know a little something about it. And you know that old saying about a little knowledge is a dangerous thing? That can be very true in PAs. You'll begin to pick up some knowledge and you'll begin to think, oh, well, you know, this is what you do. And it may not be what you do, you know? So just be a little humble and be very observant. But also don't assume that if you see someone else doing something in terms of PAs, that that is the way and that is the best way and that kind of thing. Because there are sound men, operators of PA systems. Sometimes they're, you know, the band running their own sound from the stage, and sometimes it's a sound man who is, you know, 40 years of experience, you know, creating sound for some of the greatest artists and biggest audiences in the world. It runs the whole gamut. You've got people that literally do not know what they're doing. I've played at, you know, little coffee shops where the owner of the place has a PA and doesn't even know how to turn it on. And yeah, they got a couple of mics shoved in a closet, and they pull them out and they set them on the stage and they turn it on. And they go back to doing what they know, which is, you know, making coffee and selling bagels or something. So there's a wide spectrum of knowledge about how to run sound. There's also a wide spectrum of opinions about how to run sound. So just remember that sound men, sound people, come in many varieties. So since you're not, in terms of this episode, you're not the sound person, you're not in charge of the PA, that just bear in mind that someone else is, and you need to learn to deal with them in all their variations. You know, you're going to have sound men that don't know what they're doing, and you're going to have some that they know more than you would ever learn. You cannot necessarily tell the difference. It's like I say a lot of times, you know, you can learn to play your mandolin or fiddle or something, get up on stage and play for an audience, and some guy at the end of the thing may come out and go, man, that was great, when in fact it wasn't great. You know what I'm saying? Maybe they just don't know what great is. So sound men are like this. They come in all varieties, and you have to learn to deal with them because that equipment is theirs, and it's under their control. You do have some effect on what happens. And one of those is sort of how you deal with the sound man. And I'm just going to keep saying sound man in my old school, politically incorrect state that I probably will remain in for the rest of my life. But I'm going to be honest. In all 40-some years of playing bluegrass music, I've only run into one female sound man. And she worked with her husband, who was a sound man. And I'll talk about them maybe here a little bit. Only one, so I'm just going to stick with sound man. But learn to deal with them. So let's start by talking about sound man. Number one, there's a good chance they're being paid more than you are. You might be playing this little, you know, peanut festival. You might be doing it for nothing. He's probably not doing it for nothing. Him and his buddy have, you know, brought their trailer and haul out all their gear and set it up. And when you arrive, you go, wow, they got lights and everything, you know. They're probably being paid, and you may not be. They may be making more money than you. And deal with that. We used to play at a place in Atlanta called the Red Light Cafe. It was one of the very few bluegrass dives in Atlanta. Great little place. I'm not belittling it by calling it a dive. But there were many a time when we would play there and they would charge $5 cover at the door. And the place would fill up and our 5-piece band would get up there and play. And at the end of the night, they would dole us out the money and they would collect that door money at the door and then immediately peel off $60 for the sound man. And then the rest would be handed over to the band, divided 5 ways. And there were a lot of nights when the sound man made more than us. And without mentioning any names, we had some good sound men at the Red Light, and we had some lousy ones. Because I played there over many, many years, and you know, we had several different sound men over that time. But they always got their $60. And, there were several times, generally the sound went very well, but there were nights when it didn't go so well. I remember one night, after about the second song, I had kind of a little laundry list of requests, and I the only way I could communicate with the guy at the back of the room, he was sitting up in a little booth way in the back, or about 2/3 of the way back, was to, over the PA, communicate with the guy. Now, he could talk back to us through the monitor speakers, and the audience didn't hear that. The audience would just hear a one-way communication. And I thought, this isn't the way to do this. Guys, what do you need? And I hopped down and just sort of trotted to the back and walked up to tell him, what we needed. Could you turn the guitar down a little bit? Turn the mandolin up just a hair? That's all we need, and we're going to be happy. And of course, there's lights in our face. And I trot back there and I go, he's not even there. He's not even sitting in his little booth up there. He's not even there. We played the first song. We played the second song and he's gone. And I looked around. He's sitting over at the bar eating a pizza and drinking a beer. I guess he figured he had it set and he'd just, take a break. Well, that guy was making more money than we were. So I just went back up there and I said, hey, dudes, just deal with it. Now, that wasn't the norm at the Red Light. Typically, the Red Light sound was excellent. And I've been very happy to play there, and I love the Red Light Cafe. But anyway, that kind of stuff does happen once in a while. Maybe he thought he was sitting over there and he had his ear on the ball, I don't know. But I do kind of expect a sound man to earn his money and at least be present, but hey, just what I'm talking about here is you got to learn to deal with this. Sometimes they're not. And if you get a big attitude and it's not going to help the way the audience perceives you. And bear in mind that guy sitting over there eating the pizza, he may have been a really good sound man. But at that moment he wasn't, because he wasn't up there doing his job. So you're going to deal with sound people who know what they're doing, who really know what they're doing, and others who don't know what they're doing at all. There are instances that I have played, and when you play 40 years, and probably a third of our gigs over those years, somebody else has run sound. And 95% of those, the sound has gone very well, very few problems. But we've been hosed. We've had some incidents where there was just horrible PA work going on. And when you come up there and you've been playing 30 years and you typically run your own sound and they say, we got a sound man. All you got to do is show up and we go there and it's just horrible. We have said, man, we should have just brought our own stuff. I mean, this is ridiculous. Ridiculous. We're getting hosed here. That happens. So just be prepared for that. It's not going to be perfect because you're not in control of everything. But there are some people who are great sound men who just have tons of experience doing rock and roll and loud electric music and are not all that familiar with acoustic instruments and don't really have a, you know, if they don't go around in their car listening to Third Time Out albums, they're probably not going to know how to mix your band, you know. They're going to do things, they're just going to come in, you know, kind of half awake, plugging in mics, and they look up and they go, where's the drummer? And you go, oh, this is bluegrass, you know, we don't have a drummer. And by the way, we need 5 condenser mics and 5 vocal mics. And the guy looks at you like, what? I'm not even sure I have that many microphones. Because, you know, most electric bands, all of the instruments are plugged in, and the only microphones they'll need are for, you know, the singers. So sometimes, you know, they're dealing with mic shortages, and there's certainly those rock and roll guys who are real, in many cases, great sound people. But a lot of times they're dealing with equipment deficits and experience deficits. So just expect that, you know, if your sound man spends all his time, you know, doing country music shows, that doesn't mean your bluegrass is going to come off well. So just be prepared for that. There is little you can do about it at that point. Just know that it's going to happen. Okay. Another thing that will happen is, you know, I'm talking about dealing with sound people and your attitude. I mean, if you show up and the poor guy has 2 SM58 dynamic mics and that's it, that's all he's got, and you got a 5-piece acoustic bluegrass band, you're just going to have to deal with that. You're going to have him put those 2 mics in the middle, point them at about, you know, 30 degrees to one another, and you all circle up around them and play. What else are you going to do? Do the best you can with what you're dealt. You know, play the cards that are dealt. But try to maintain some kind of a good attitude about this. Because, you know, you're not doing anybody a favor by getting ill with the sound man. And in fact, if you do get a little attitude with the sound man, they can intentionally hose you. I like to use that term, hose. But, I mean, you don't want to start animosity between you and the guy twisting those knobs. Now, there was a little festival I played a couple of times. I was an honorary member of the Slacky family band with Aubrey Slacky, and he would round up his crew and play this little festival. It was just kind of in a back alley inside a fenced-in enclosure somewhere, I don't know, somewhere on the southeast side of Atlanta, southwest side of Atlanta. I don't remember where it was. Anyway, it was one of these little festivals where 30 bands show up and play, you know, for 2 days, and most of them are rock bands and punk bands, and I mean, it's everything. And Slacky would put this gig together and we would go play there. We had maybe 30 minutes to perform, and I remember getting up there one time, and we walked up and everybody plugged in or grabbed a microphone, and you know, about a 10-second sound check, and then it's hit it. And when we started, those monitors were blowing my hair back, and that was back when I had hair. The monitors were so incredibly loud, and all I could hear was Aubrey's guitar, just rhythm guitar. I mean, I was just getting slammed with rhythm guitar. I couldn't hear anybody else, and we had a mandolin and a fiddle and a bass and I forget what we had, maybe a harmonica player or something that day. All I could hear was Slacky's guitar. So at the end of the first song, I'm trying to get the attention of the sound man, you know, and I'm going to ask him, could you just turn that guitar down a little bit? We're not asking for nothing else. I can't get his attention. He's standing over there drinking a beer, and he's not even looking at the stage. So I hopped off the stage, trotted back there, and said, hey, man, that guitar in the monitors is just killing us. Could you just back that guitar off a little bit? And I turn around, headed back to the stage. And about halfway to the stage, I turn around and looked back at the sound man. He was standing there with his buddy. And they were just turning up beers. And I thought, I didn't see him move toward that thing. I got up on the stage, and he actually turned the guitar up. And he turned my mandolin monitor off. I was hearing it before, and it was turned off. During the next song, I kind of looked over at him and made eye contact with the dudes. And the guy literally rolled his eyes and started laughing and poking his buddy in the ribs. And then they turned their backs to us. That's getting hosed intentionally. That guy was like, yeah, right. You know, when I asked him to do something, you know, he felt like his job was to haul all those big speakers in there and set them up, turn the thing on, and have a good time. Anyway, I say that because I'm telling you this story because that may happen to you, and don't let it flip you out. Just play and deal with it. I've also had just the opposite. And there was a sound man who did a lot of large bluegrass festivals in the Southeast, a guy named Gene Daniel. I got to know Gene when he was a bass player. He was an awesome upright bass player. And he was playing with these guys, the Golden River Grass, Doodle and the Golden River Grass, Doodle Thrower. I'll put a YouTube video of Doodle on the show notes page. Go over there and check him out. If you go back to my See the Elephant episode, where I talked about my first trip to the Marietta Bluegrass Festival, Doodle was there holding court, and there was nobody like Doodle. But Gene was their bass player. Now check out the video. Go to the show notes and watch the YouTube of Doodle. Anyway, Gene was their bass player, and I used to see Gene around at festivals, and he played with a couple of bands and stuff. He's a really good bass player. And then I showed up at a festival one time, and he was running sound. It was great. He really knew what he was doing. And over the years, he did bigger and bigger festivals. He and his wife, and I think maybe his son or somebody helped him. But it was mostly he and his wife. Gene would be on stage wearing a set of headphones and a microphone with a radio on his hip. And Gene took care of the musicians. He set up the microphones and he ran the monitor mix for the bands. Whatever you needed, just tap Gene on the shoulder and tell him what you want. He made the sound on stage as perfect as he could. And his wife ran the house. So she was back at the back of the audience, you know, with the main, manning the house mix. And he could talk to her back and forth over his radio system. It was the smoothest thing. And, you know, I knew Gene, and one time, I'd been playing many years, and I guess I was kind of cruising down toward the end of my Cedar Hill period. This is probably in about 2009 or thereabouts. Gene calls me up one day, and he says, hey, I'm doing this show. I'm doing the Tony Rice unit out at an auditorium in Bowdoin, Georgia. How would you like to come out and help me run sound? And I thought, hey, yeah, I'd love to do that. So I did. And I kind of got the feeling that Gene was, I spent the whole day with him. We got out there really early in the morning and lugged equipment and, you know, ran a 200-foot snake. And I mean, we were, and you know, they sound checked early afternoon, and I just watched him do his thing. And I had played over his system many, many times over the years. He used to do sound at Dahlonega and at Myrtle Beach and at Jekyll Island, all those Norman Adams bluegrass festivals and other festivals. He did the Marietta Bluegrass Festival a lot. So I knew he knew what he was doing. And I thought, I'm going to go. And, you know, even if I'm just lugging gear around, I can learn something from Gene. And of course, I had been running our own band sound for many years in Pony Express. And, you know, I wasn't new to the concept of running sound. But anyway, I went, and I think maybe Gene was fishing around for some younger help, you know, somebody that might be able to take up the sound man business, you know, because he was a few years older than me. That didn't work out. Gene died not too long after that, and I don't know what became of their sound reinforcement company, but I'll tell you what, I've never played on better sound in my life than what Gene Daniel ran. Anyway, that's just my little tribute to Gene. Great guy, and I miss the dude. And the thing that was noticeable about playing on him was the fact that he was not noticed. You'd show up at a festival, and I've done this many times, show up, and I'm kind of looking around, and I'm like, who's doing sound here? And, you know, some people I'm happy to see, and some people I wasn't. A lot of times I didn't know who they were. You know, it was just, there's some guys back there, and they're doing the sound. But if I looked over and, you know, I saw Gene, I knew it was going to be just smooth as silk. And Gene, you know, I learned at that, doing that one gig with him, that Tony Rice Unit thing, I learned that Gene had an automated mixer with a memory in it, so that if he had run sound for the Seldom Scene before, and he had run sound for everybody, and they would get up and sound check, he could record all of their settings, you know, like how much mandolin did they want in the monitors and how much fiddle. And he had incredibly good microphones too. I remember at that show, Ricky Simpkins was there and he was playing fiddle. And while they were sound checking, Gene allowed so much time that each player had about 30 minutes to come out there and become completely happy and comfortable with what was going on. And I remember Ricky came out there and Gene put on some kind of, gave him a choice of about three microphones on his fiddle. And these were some high dollar microphones, and I'm not going to quote what they were because I don't recall, but big time microphones. But he also had an AKG C1000S, which is the microphone I've carried around for many, many years and played mandolin over all these years. Long time. Gene laid these three microphones out and said, which one you want? And, you know, they try this one, and then they try this one. It kind of tickled me that he picked the AKG. That's what he thought sounded better than those, you know, $5,000 and $10,000 mics. I don't remember what they were. Anyway, my point here with Gene is that when you encounter a good one, you don't notice them. You walk up there, and there's this guy in front of you who just positions the mic and, you know, everything, and you start, and everything's clicking, and you forget there is a sound system. So what I'm saying is if the sound is run right, the audience doesn't notice it, and the players don't notice it. Yeah, you might ask for something. You might say, hey, you know, could I get a little more banjo? And you'll get a little more banjo. Or you might think you got a little more banjo. He might have actually turned everything else down a little bit. You know, I don't know what he does over there. That's sort of my philosophy on that, is what they want is the mix. Sometimes somebody will ask for something, you know, and you might be guilty of this. You say, I can't hear the guitar. Can you turn that guitar up? But that may not be the problem. The problem may be that the bass is too loud. You know what I mean? It's about the balance. And so I'm not sure that Gene did as asked, but he knew that if somebody said, can you give me more mandolin? What they were really saying was, I can't hear the mandolin in this mix. So, you know, how you cure that, you could either turn up the mandolin or turn something else down that's competing with the mandolin. Of course, his system was so elaborate that he could give a different mix to each individual player. If you were the fiddle player and you wanted less fiddle, he could just turn you down in yours. Most PA systems that you're going to encounter, it's everybody gets the same monitor mix, so just be prepared for that. Don't think you are going to get something different than the guy next to you unless you're playing a pretty big venue with, you know, pretty sophisticated equipment. Okay, but back to the main point. If you've got a good sound man, you'll barely notice them. So be sure at the if it went really well to thank that person. Try to maintain good relationships with sound people, even the bad ones, because sometimes it's not really the bad one's fault. You might say, at the end of a gig, you might go, man, that guy didn't know what he was doing. And that may not be true. He could have been having some technical problem that really he is not to blame for. Or it could be you. You might have been the problem. You might be moving in and out on the microphone all the time. He might have come up there and put the microphone perfectly on your guitar. You sound checked. It sounded great. And then every time you take a break, you shove the sound hole right in the face of that microphone and it feeds back and he has no choice but to make alterations. So what I'm saying is, thank the good ones, thank the bad ones, try to maintain a good relationship with your sound man. And just remember, in a little while, it's all going to be over and you're going to be dealing with a different one next time. Okay, so deal with it. It's not going to be perfect. Don't expect perfection. If you're a perfectionist, you're in the wrong business. Music is not about perfection. You know, we try for it, but that's not what it's about. Okay, and try to maintain a good, decent attitude, if you can. It isn't going to do you a bit of good to get riled up and hacked off at the sound man. It ain't going to do you any good. He's already having trouble. You laying a bunch of that on him is just going to make it worse. Okay. So let me give you some tips that when you walk up there, let's say you're a band and you've had very limited experience playing on PAs, or some of your members have had very limited experience playing on a PA and you get asked to play a little bluegrass festival. One thing you need to do is get there early, stand around and watch what's going on. Watch what other people are doing. And see what gear they have up there. Do they have a bass amp? Is the bass player plugging into a direct box? Or is he going into an amp? You know, kind of just take notice of what's going on. So that when you get up there, you don't ask for something that doesn't exist. If they don't have a bass amp up there and you didn't bring one, don't ask for one, you know? I mean, they might have one in the trailer, but what I'm saying is just get there early. Listen to a couple other bands, be observant of what's going on, and then make yourself a little plan. Then, and I have a few of these things listed out, and some of these are out of order, but one of the things you can do at that stage is one of your members who is the most knowledgeable about PAs and is also probably the most socially gifted. It would be good if you had a printout of or a drawing showing where you stand and what microphones you need. You know, like draw a stage plot. Draw the stage and write audience on one side so they know which way it's facing. And, you know, draw a little circle and say banjo and then draw two little microphones in front of it. You know, I need a banjo mic and a vocal mic. And then beside him, I need a guitar mic and a vocal mic. Beside him, I need a mandolin mic and a vocal mic. And then our bass player likes to stand in the middle in the back, and he wants to go in direct. So just put bass direct. And maybe that's your band. So have this little plot. Sometimes they can accommodate you, and sometimes they can't. Be aware of that, but that's, you know, give him something to work with, you know, tell him where you're going to stand because the band who goes on before you, the banjo player may be way down on the left and you like your banjo player down on the right. And if you tell him that, when you walk up there, he'll already start shuffling things around and be making accommodations for you. So go over there, hand him your little sheet and, you know, not like a set of demands, But, you know, this is kind of like our preferred way, you know, how we set up. And this is what we're going to need. We're going to need 3 vocal mics, 3 instrument mics, and a bass direct. And that's it. Or we need a mic on the bass or whatever. Tell them what you need and do it early. Do it, you know, 30, 40 minutes before you guys need to get up. Because there's going to be limited time once you walk on stage to do any kind of sound check. And the truth is, they're not really sound checking. They're sound verifying. They're having you walk up to the microphone and be sure your mic works. That's about it. Is it on? The sound checking at a festival type gig happens continuously throughout the event. You know, the sound guy, maybe he's done a couple of bands before you. He's sort of got a guitar sound dialed in. He's been messing around with it. And when you walk up there, he's probably going to take that same microphone and move it over and put it in front of your guitar player. And he's 80% there at that point. So kind of look at how other people are playing and mimic that a little bit. Give the guy, you know, a little laundry list. Here's what we need, or here's what we'd like. Okay? So now, you walk up. It's your time. First of all, give the band before you time to clear out. Don't start storming the stage while they're still packing up. Be ready. Have everything you need. If you need a cord, have it in your hand. Be tuned up. Don't tune on stage. Tune up backstage. Be ready. Set your case over to the side so you got spare strings and a tuner if you need it, or whatever emergency stuff you might need. Put it over to the side, out of the way. Don't block the other band who's coming off. If they're coming off, you know, say some nice, honest things to them. Hey, I really like that such song. Mention it by name. You know, make some good points with the bands coming off, but, you know, don't feed them a bunch of baloney, too. You know what I mean? Maintain some relationship. Those guys are pumped up with adrenaline and they're just coming off stage. Be polite to them. You know, a little small talk with the band coming off, but don't go up there until they have cleared out. Once they're off the stage, you come on there, get in your positions. Everybody get where they need to be and be quiet. Don't be playing and fooling around up there. Stand where you're going to stand and wait. Let the sound man do his job. Let him, he's going to get to you. He's probably right now looking down at that sheet of paper you gave him, and he's adjusting a few things and kind of marking down some stuff on his board, and he's getting to you. He may have a helper who is starting to poke microphones in front of you. Just stand where you want to stand. And I would suggest, by the way, a little bit of a semicircular lineup. Even if everybody else has been lining up in a straight line, I think a little semicircular positioning is good for hearing and visually seeing each other. You know, and if you can, try to get kind of close together a little bit. And I say that from experience. Sometimes the monitors are bad, and you'll always play better if you're acoustically hearing each other. So pretend like you have no PA and you're going to play for these 300 people sitting in the grass out in front of you, and there's no PA and you want to be able to hear each other. Position yourself so you can hear each other, but don't close off that circle so much that, you know, you begin to have your back to the audience or your side to the audience. Don't just play for each other. Do face the audience, but If you get put a little bend in that line of microphones, just pull the middle 2 guy back 10 inches. Now you can make eye contact with each other and you'll play better, especially if things go south with the PA, which they could. You don't know. The band before you, it might have been perfect, and for you, it could go crazy. You don't know. And if you can make eye contact and you have your instruments pointed slightly towards each other, you're going to have to do a much better job. And you don't have to rely on the monitors so much. Okay, so you're standing up there quietly waiting to play. And there, the microphones are being arranged. At some point, somebody is going to say, all right, let me hear that guitar. Sound checking, making sure it's on. Just start playing some rhythm guitar. Play rhythm for a few, 10 seconds. Pick a little lead if you play lead. Go back to a little bit of rhythm. Play some steady rhythm. Give them time to dial it in. Don't just play three notes and stop and look at them and say, hey, I need more guitar and the monitors. Forget the monitors. Just play your instrument and let the guy work, okay? Play. Give him something to work with. He'll tell you when to stop. He'll say, okay, cool, that's enough. How about you, mandolin player? Let me hear that mandolin. Don't go up there, don't poke your sound hole right in that microphone and go whack, 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 chop, chop, chop. Because the first thing, if you do that, he's just going to turn you way down. Then he's going to say, play a little lead. And you start picking, and it's way too soft. There's a huge difference between the power of a mandolin chop and the power of the lead play. So use a little good sense and work the microphone a little bit. Don't move around a whole lot during sound checks, but for mandolin players in particular, don't get up there and start blasting that guy with your powerful chop. Start by playing some lead and position yourself. I don't know. I'm just going to say what I do, maybe 3 or 4 inches away from the microphone. Play some lead. Keep playing some lead until he looks pretty good. And then maybe back up 3 or 4 inches, maybe slightly to the side and hit a couple of chops, Don't put them chops in that same position that you put your lead playing or you are asking for it. Okay, enough about that. You do this until he tells you to stop. When he tells you to stop, stop. Don't keep fooling around. It's the next guy's turn. He's really over there just trying to make sure it's on, and establish a little bit of a somewhat of a correct level for you and the way you play and where you put yourself in front of the microphone. He's just trying to verify. He is not mixing and all that. He just wants to know it's working good and we're in a hurry here and let's get to the next one. So when they move to the next one, great. But after they move to the next one, you walk up there to actually play. When you kick off that first song, don't change what you did in terms of positioning. Don't stand in a different place. Don't stand 12 inches different than where you sound checked. If you check there, play there. Okay. That doesn't mean you have to be glued to the microphone. You should not be glued to the microphone. You should learn how to work a microphone. I could do it. And I might do a full episode on working microphones, but you don't have to be glued to it, but don't make radical changes in where you are. You're going to drive the guy crazy. Okay. So everybody is verified to be working. Hit it. When they introduce you, hit it. Play. And don't worry about those darn monitors at this point. That guy, his number one job is to make sure everybody is live and working, functioning. His next job is to make sure the audience can hear you. He may have somebody out there listening. It could be him out there listening. That's number one. Well, number one is they're on and working. Number two is the audience can hear you. So he's monkeying around with that. Third thing is you. Can you hear yourself? And along the way, there is put out the fires. Something's feeding back. Let the guy do his job. Play your first song, smile, and play. Try to forget that PA system to the extent you can. It's not going to be perfect. It may get a little better. It could get worse. Try to ignore it and just play. At the end of the first song, the worst thing you could do is have 5 members of your band suddenly start asking the guy for this and for that. And can you turn this up and turn that down and turn this up? That is the bad time to do it. He's got a lot on his plate right at that moment. And you'll make it worse. The best thing to do is just be aware of what's going on and start your second song. At the end of the second song is a good time. He's probably got the front of the house out there for the audience pretty well dialed in, and he is now waiting and hoping to hear what you guys think. What do you think? And this is different. If you play a show and they do a true sound check where you've got 45 minutes or an hour alone with the sound guy to get everything dialed in, that's different. Just do what he's asking and try to, you know, communicate back and forth. But when it has to happen in 5 minutes or 10 minutes in between bands, there is no real sound check. So don't expect one. If you demand one, you're going to look like an idiot. So just deal with it. But about the end of the second song, as you're playing the first song and as you're playing the second song, you're making a little mental list of, boy, you know, I really could use a little more mandolin, but you know what? Now that I'm playing, I realize it's really just the guitar that's too loud. And probably the guitar player is not going to think that. He loves hearing himself. You know what I'm saying? That could be happening. He's probably not going to be the one to say, hey, could you turn me down? But you might, after the second song, walk over to whoever's doing the monitors and say, hey, I'm not hearing the mandolin very well, but I'm getting tons of guitar. Maybe you could back off the guitar just a wee bit and maybe push the mandolin up just a tiny bit. You walk back out there and you're going to be surprised. It's going to be better. Don't go over there and say, man, you're killing me with that dadgum guitar. Would you turn that thing down? He's just going to get an attitude, you know. So try to be, you know, be understanding of what that person is over there trying to do. Okay, enough about all that. This thing is getting long. So at that point, just play your show. Try to ignore the thing. If there's some, you know, along the way, something that's still bugging you, you know, it's okay to communicate it, but don't expect any major changes. And don't stop, no matter what. Certainly don't stop in the middle of a song. If suddenly you hear a big squeal or roar or something, do not stop. Just keep playing no matter how bad it is. Because, trust me, the sound man heard it. And he's feverishly over there trying to cure it. You stopping is not going to help him cure it, you know? And you're going to look like idiots, and the audience is going to be, they're going to be hearing bad. They're hearing the bad stuff anyway, but it's not the audience's fault. Just go on, keep going, keep going. And give the guy time to work it out. Okay, here's another little tip for when you're up there playing. If you need to say something to the sound man, don't say it over the microphone, unless that's the only way you can communicate with him. I've played gigs where the sound man was 100 yards across a field and there was nobody on stage. He didn't have a helper, you know, where he could communicate. There was no sound man on stage. And in those cases, you do have to communicate somehow over the microphones, but a lot of times you don't have to. There have been many a case where at the end of a song, maybe this is the end of the second tune or something, I'm just kind of just start trying to make eye contact with a guy. And if you see he's looking at you, you can point at your mandolin and give a, you know, like thumbs down, turn down a little bit, you know, and mouth some words to him without doing it over the microphone. And a lot of times that is sufficient. Sometimes, you know, little signal or just give him the okay, man, just give him the two thumbs up. And he won't touch any of the knobs, you know. Let him know that things are good, too, or he may keep fiddling around. Okay. If you have to, you can say something over the microphone, but don't complain over the microphone. And don't drag it out too long. Just wait for a quiet spot and just say what you got to say. Could you turn down the bass just a little bit? Thanks. And if he does, fine. If he doesn't, fine. You said it, you tried, okay? And now if there's a sound person on stage, don't do it over the microphone. Just walk over, lean over, say your little thing, and walk back, okay? All right, here's another little tip for you if you're new to PA systems, and it's especially if it is not your equipment. When you walk out there, don't touch the microphones. keep your hands off the mics. No matter what happens, don't touch the mics. You can move yourself, but keep your hands off the mic. It's okay to touch the microphone stands. If the microphone you feel is just, you're singing and you're having to hunch down to sing, if you want to reach down, loosen that stand and raise that microphone up about 3 inches and tighten it back, that's cool. But try to keep your hands off the microphones. Because if for some reason there is a lousy connection on a cable and you go fiddling around with the microphones, you can create pops that are very loud, excruciatingly loud, and can be damaging to the speakers. Keep your hands off the mics. And pay attention to the cords that are going to the mics. A lot of people wind the cords around the microphone stands. And sometimes there's not enough slack in the cord for you to do much moving of the microphone. Like you might want to tilt the mic. Let's say you walk up to a microphone and you're going to sing over it, and it seems like it's too high. It's pointing at your eyebrows. And your natural inclination is to grab the mic and tilt it down. Don't do that. Grab the height adjustment on the stand, loosen it, and lower the whole thing down a little bit. That way you don't have to tilt the microphone at all. If you can, in other words, if you can change the positioning to your liking without touching the microphone, that's better. Okay, another thing is, if you walk up there, and especially during this initial sound verifying, sound checking, and you're playing and nothing's happening, don't grab the mic and start pulling the cord in and out of the back and tapping it and blowing on it and flicking the switch on and off. Keep your dadgum hands off the guy's microphone, okay? More than likely, it was working, but he just had you muted over on the board. You know, he had you muted because he thought you're probably going to walk out and monkey with the microphone. So he mutes you while you're, you know, playing around with the microphone. Once you're happy and you get your hands off, then he unmutes it. If he's good, that's what he's doing. So if you walk up there, I've seen guys walk out. I've seen guys in my band walk out and do this. Getting ready to play. Fiddling with the microphone, I got them muted because they're making all kinds of racket with the microphone. Loud stuff that I don't want going out over the PA, I got them muted. When I see he's done fooling around with the microphone and he's got his hands off of it, I reach over and I unmute him and now he's live. At that point, I don't want him touching that thing. But while he's muted, I've seen guys reach down and flick the switch back and forth. I've seen guys reach down, jerk the cord out and shove it in and out a few times and go, hey, this ain't working. I know it's not working. I have you muted. As soon as you quit fooling with that thing, I'll turn you on. Okay. And you'll learn this as you play over PA systems over the years. But just as a general rule, I think this is fair to say, keep your hands off the mics. You know, you can touch the stands and make little adjustments to the stands, but try not to touch microphones. Okay. Another important thing, and which I briefly touched on, was, well, let me say it this way, in terms of the concept. What you're hearing on stage is the monitor mix. You have no clue what's going out to the audience. From the backside of those speakers, you do not know. So forget that. That's just not part of your job. Unless you're running your own sound, then it is your job. But it's the sound man's responsibility. If somebody 200 feet away cannot hear the fiddle, you're not even going to know it. So don't get involved in the house sound when somebody else is running the sound. You know, if the audience is screaming, turn up the bass, turn up, you know, that's the sound man's job. Don't even worry about it. That is not your job unless you're running your own sound, and that'll be in a different episode. So forget the house. But do bear in mind that the house sound, you do hear it. You hear it bouncing back from the hinterlands, and you hear the backsides of the speakers a lot. And so you tend to get a lot of bass and low mid-range off the back of the speakers, and God forbid if they have subwoofers under the stage or down low, you're going to get a lot of bass. It's going to be really bassy and muddy, especially if you've got a rock and roll sound man. doing bluegrass. He'll come in with all the firepower, and you don't generally need all that. So there have been a lot of instances where I've played in a bluegrass setting directly behind an electric rock and roll band, and I have asked them, just turn the bass off. I don't need any bass. Do not put the bass in the monitors, because I'm just getting creamed with bass already, because they tend to be bass heavy rock mixer guys. And in a lot of cases, the standard thing, if you walk up and you're following some rock bands, my standard request, what I expect to ask for, is, could you please turn the monitors down to about half of where you got them right now, and just turn that bass way down, and we just play. Because you're going to get a ton of bass off the back of those speakers, off the back of the house speakers. So you typically don't need a whole lot of bass boosting. If you do, it may be just in the higher, you know, EQ range of the bass, so you can hear the attack of it. Anyway, it's an art form. Just bear in mind that playing over PAs is as much of an art form as playing your instrument. So think of it as a long-term learning process. I think I've probably covered enough here. I actually have a few more things written down, but I'm not going to go into, I was going to talk some about the one mic situation, but I think I'll cover that in when we talk about running your own sound. But knowing how to work over one mic is important. It's gotten real popular lately, and I'll talk about that sometime in the future. But just a couple little things, just to recap, you know, get there early, have a little stage plot figured out. Don't expect it to be met. Be flexible. You know, try not to get mad. I've gotten mad at some sound men. I've you know, always regretted it immediately. I mean, I haven't gone over there and just unloaded on some guy. I've never done that, but I've gotten, you know, feeling my blood pressure rising because, you know, you encounter people that literally don't know what they're doing or having a difficult time because they're just not familiar with bluegrass or something, where, you know, I may know what the problem is and they don't. And you know, that happens, especially as you become more experienced, but try to keep you cool because it doesn't do you any good. A last thing I would tell you is, in terms of working a microphone, and I said I may do this in a future episode, but just remember that distance from the microphone equals change in the volume. The farther away you are, it's like turning yourself down. The closer you are, the louder it is. There are other aspects to it, but learn to do that. You know, if you need to be a little louder, you need to move in. If you need to be a little softer, you need to move out. Or direct yourself away, you know. But if you do too much of that in and out, radical changing, some sound men will begin to follow you. Like if you backing up because you want less mandolin chop, he may turn you up. Now when you come in for your lead, it's too loud. So you got to be careful with that. Don't be too over obvious with your in and outs and stuff. Because what you don't want is a knob twisting sound man who follows you and tries to like turn you up on your solo and turn you down after your solo and all that. What you want is a get a good mix, and you turn yourself up and down by how you position yourself. I hope you don't get a knob twister. They should twist knobs to correct problems, but not if they're mixing on the fly, trying to make you sound great. Sometimes it doesn't work. And last thing is, if you're playing an acoustic instrument, watch out for those sound holes, because there is air pumping out of the sound hole, just like your mouth pumps air out when you're singing. And you can make a lot of pops and blasts and, you know, feedback and low frequency feedback, especially on a guitar, if you jam that microphone right in the throat of that sound hole. So try to avoid the sound hole, that air blast coming out. Okay. And last thing is, as much as you can, try to, you know, rely on a real acoustic sound by how you position yourself and how you play, rather than relying on those monitors. If you can live with less monitors, you'll probably play better, you know, and your ears will last longer. All right, this is enough of this. In an upcoming episode, I'm going to talk more about acquiring a PA system, my opinions on that, and there's a lot of opinions out there. I'm going to give you my opinions based on many years of experience about the, you know, where you might start out, you know, getting your own PA system and how to run your own sound. So we'll do that in a future episode. I'm going to end this one first by saying thanks to everybody who has supported the show, either by telling someone else about it and sharing some links. Please do that. You know, this is all word of mouth. I do not have a budget for advertising. So you're my advertising. If you love this, you know, if this is right up your alley, tell some other people. Maybe it will be up their alley. And thank you to everybody who's become a Grass Talk Radio supporter with the official supporter pack. It's on the website. Go to grasstalkradio.com and you'll see that. And especially, I thank anybody who has purchased any of my instructional materials, videos, and ebooks. You know, Christmas time's coming and I got to buy that boy a French horn. Maybe if I can scare up the money. Or, you know, if I could talk him into a banjo, it'd be a lot easier because I got one in the closet I could lay on him. Anyway, I just want to say a heartfelt thanks to you for your support. And I'm just going to keep these coming. We're going to end this episode with a little bit of live sound. And you can hear some of the good and some of the bad. Here is a live tape from Pony Express playing Dark Hollow at the Red Light Cafe in Atlanta. This tape was just recorded direct off the board. This was not the night of the guy who was eating the pizza, by the way. The sound was typically pretty good. Anyway, this is Pony Express playing Dark Hollow live in all its glory at the Red Light Cafe. This is probably back about 2003, I think. Anyway, have fun, and I'll talk to you in the next episode. Oh, hey, before we get to the song, there was one more thing that I meant to mention, and I was thinking of it as soon as I turned off the recorder, and I thought, well, I'll say it in a future episode. No, I need to put it in this episode, and it's just one little tip. If you are playing an instrument that plugs in, maybe you're playing a bass with a pickup in it, or you're whatever, if you plug into the sound system, here's my tip for you. When you walk up there, have your cord ready, your preamp or whatever. Do not plug in until you ask permission from the sound man. You say to the guy, hey, Jim, and by the way, you should get his name early in this process. Call him by his name. You know, you'll get better results if you go, hey, Jim. You may forget it the next day, but get his name and use it. Be nice to the guy. Say, hey, Jim, is this where you want me to plug in the bass? He says, yeah. And just ask him, have you got it muted? You got it turned off? He goes, yeah. Then plug in. Do not plug in until you've asked that question. And you might not, he may be busy and you may not have his attention yet. Wait until you get, until you're positive that it is muted. You do not want to plug into a live jack. Or it can, you know, create a loud pop in the system, and you'll immediately get the evil eye from the sound man for destroying his tweeters. At the end of the show, or any time during the show, do not unplug. Do not, if you think it's not working, don't reach down there and jerk that plug in and out. Because that's probably not the problem, okay? Sometimes there are dirty connections, bad cords, all that kind of stuff. Do not pull that cord in and out of that jack without saying to the sound man, have you got me muted over here? Have you got the bass muted? He says, yes. Now you unplug. I've made that mistake a few times. That's why I know. I've done it running my own sound, you know. I've reached up to mute it and muted the wrong thing or something. It happens, but, you know, don't plug in and unplug at the end of the thing and everybody's packing up, the guitar player's walking off and you're there, you're playing the bass, let's say, and you're plugged into the sound man's direct box. Don't reach down there and jerk that cord out of there. Look at him and go, hey, have you got me muted? He probably has. He probably muted everybody immediately, but he might not have. So assume that everything's live and don't unplug until you ask permission. Okay, that's it. Now let's get on with Here's Pony Express playing Dark Hollow.
We just gonna...
I'd rather be in some dark hollow where the sun don't ever shine than to be all alone knowing that you're gone would cause me to do my mind. So blow your whistle, freight train, carry me farther on down the track. Well, I'm going away. Where the sun don't ever shine, than to be all alone in some city in a small room with your love on my mind. So blow your whistle, freight train, carry me farther on down the track. I'm going away, I'm leaving today. I'm going, but I ain't coming back. I'd rather be in some dark hollow where the sun don't ever shine than to be all alone knowing that you're gone would cause me to lose my mind. So blow